Good morning and welcome to the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, July 21st. It's 2010, the year 2010. It's 9:30 a.m. and City Council will come to session. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Unless there's objection on Council, I'm going to take item 1045 first. Carla, can you please read the title for time certain, proclamation item number 1045.
Proclaim July 26, 2010 to be the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act in Portland.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. This is a wonderful day and a very important day where we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I'm going to start by reading the proclamation that Mayor Adams has signed. Whereas on July 26, 1990, President George Herbert Walker Bush signed into law the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, to ensure the civil rights of people with disabilities. And whereas this legislation established a clear and comprehensive national mandate for the elimination of discrimination against individuals with disabilities. And whereas the ADA has expanded opportunities for Americans with disabilities by reducing barriers, changing perceptions, and increasing full participation in community life. And whereas the full promise of the ADA will only be reached if public entities remain committed in their efforts to fully implement the ADA. And whereas the City of Portland and partner organizations are recognizing the 20th anniversary of the ADA by hosting a series of educational trainings and events during the months of June and July, and whereas the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, we celebrate and recognize progress that has been made under the ADA by reaffirming the principles of equality and inclusion and recommitting our efforts to reach full ADA compliance. Therefore, Sam Adams, the Mayor of the City of Portland of Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim Monday, July 26, 2010, to be the 20th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act in Portland and urges all residents, organizations, and businesses to take action in promoting the ADA.
Yay.
So thank you all for being here on this momentous occasion, and I am proud to be an American on this day and proud of the progress we've made while still recognizing that much progress still needs to be made. And as I start, I particularly want to thank David Miller, who is here, who came into my office last year and said, "You are going to do something for the 20th anniversary, right?" And I said yes at the time, and I'm very happy that we're doing this. And also thank Nicole Chiron, the Disability Program Coordinator, for facilitating interactions between the community and government, Danielle Brooks, the City of Portland's ADA Title II Coordinator, for her guidance on ADA compliance and policy, and the Portland Commission on Disability for their advice on disability issues, and indeed all members involved in the disability community for organizing events in the city and county to celebrate this 20th anniversary. I'm really happy that the Commission on Disabilities is housed in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, which is reaching out to many different kinds of communities and wants to include everybody in our city government and participation in our civic discussions. We do still have a ways to go to ensure universal accessibility to city programs and services. And there have been many major accomplishments, even in the 18 months that I have been here. And I have to say that probably the best is the creation of the Commission on Disability in October 2009 and the wonderful work that the Commission is already doing. And thank you so much for all of the work that you do. The Commission is charged with guiding the city and ensuring that it is a more universally accessible city for all and advises me and the Council on disability-related issues. So there are also other city programs that are working with community members to provide accessibility to people with disabilities, including the Disability Program in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, the Portland Parks and Recreation Adaptive and Inclusive Recreation Program, the Portland Police Bureau's Developmental Disabilities Advisory Committee, Portland Housing Bureau's Housing Connections Program, Volunteer Emergency Registry Program, and many others. To celebrate the 20th anniversary of the ADA, the City of Portland, in partnership with several community organizations, will be hosting a resource fair at Portland State University on Monday, July 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. with several local organizations. And in addition, the Disability Program will be hosting a roll and stroll on August 3rd, which I believe the mayor is participating in, as am I, which is a great training for city employees, especially those involved in planning design, as it raises awareness of what it is like to travel in Portland as a person with a disability. I'd now introduce Danielle Brooks, the City of Portland's Title II coordinator.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back, both of you. Hi, Donnie.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you. My name is Danielle Brooks, and I work in the Office of Management and Finance as the Americans with Disabilities Act Title II and Civil Rights Title VI Coordinator for the City of Portland. I'm very honored to be here today to talk a little bit about the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, and its relationship to the city, and thank you for recognizing the importance of this event in celebrating and introducing the proclamation celebrating the ADA's 20th year. Prior to the ADA, barriers to employment, transportation, public accommodations, and public services imposed economic and social costs on society and undermined the rights and well-being of our citizens with disabilities. The ADA has enabled us to break down many of these barriers. This landmark legislation, enacted on July 26, 1990, provides comprehensive civil rights and protections to people with disabilities, prohibiting discrimination and providing greater access. The ADA provides rights and protections in five different areas: Title I, employment; Title II, public services; Title III, public accommodations; Title IV, telecommunications; and Title V, as miscellaneous provisions regarding coercion and retaliation. The City of Portland is considered a Title II or public service entity. Title II of the ADA assures that no person with a disability, by reason of such disability, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subject to discrimination under any of our programs, services, or activities. By providing effective communication methods, which allow for meaningful and equal participation, and reasonable modifications of policies and procedures, the city works diligently to ensure that we give people with disabilities an equal opportunity to benefit from and enjoy all of our benefits and programs and services, and that those programs are accessible and usable. The city also continues to make sure that individuals are not excluded from services, programs, and activities because of inaccessible elements in buildings that existed before 1992, which is when the standards came out. Where public use spaces and facilities are inaccessible, we achieve program accessibility through alterations of new construction of additional facilities, relocation of services to accessible facilities, and provisions of services at alternative sites. Over the last 20 years, the city has continually worked on Title II compliance. For example, we've made numerous upgrades to our existing facilities and continue to comply with federal and state requirements for new construction and public space alterations. The city has established an HR Title I coordinator, incorporated ADA into diversity training, established a Title II program, disability program, and a network of ADA coordinators within all of our bureaus. We've developed policies for ensuring program accessibility through request and grievance procedures, and developed standard forms that are available online. We've provided ADA training to employees, developed a self-evaluation and transition plan to assess our ADA compliance, and develop a guide for implementation, constructed a series of web pages with resources for easy access to information and technical assistance to city employees, and establish collaborative efforts and opportunities with the community for input on projects, designs, and programs, including the most recently created Portland Commission on Disability. Despite all of these gains, we continue to find significant disparities between people with disabilities, which is one of the fastest growing segments of our population, and people without disabilities. We find the disparities in many different systems, institutions, and indicators, such as employment, poverty levels, health care and human service access, transportation access, and housing access, to name a few. We must continue our commitment to ADA compliance and continue breaking down barriers, ending inequalities, and sustaining rights. While we have come a long way, we have a long way to go. There's so much more that we, working together in partnership with the community, can do to advance the ADA's purpose and intentions. With your continued support over the next few years, we hope to further memorialize our policies and procedures in the ADA Title II program plan. We plan to update our city's programmatic communication and physical accessibility assessments, including timelines and recommendations for any necessary and feasible improvements, continue with information dissemination and outreach to the public, not only through the disability program, but also through inclusive public participation in all the bureaus, expand ADA training for additional rounds of city employees, work further with each bureau to continue to address the needs of the public within their respective programs and incorporating service delivery best practices, and continue to meet the standards for accessible design, but where possible, work with the community to take a universal design approach. I'd now like to turn it over to my colleague, Donnie Adair from the Bureau of Human Resources, to talk a little bit about Title I and city activities. And I want to thank you again for your time, commitment, and support.
Good morning. I'm Donnie Adair with the Diversity Development Affirmative Action Office in the Bureau of Human Resources. I'm here this morning for Joseph Quinones, the senior manager, who could not be with us this morning, and on behalf of course, our director, Yvonne L. Deckard. Our responsibility is in the area of employment, and the way we've addressed that, of course, over the years is to make sure that the city maintains a policy in accordance with the ADA, and I've given to you a copy of our current policy, Human Resource Administrative Rule 2.01, Equal Employment Opportunity, and I would just draw your attention to the portion where it says that the city will continue to recruit, hire, train, promote into all levels of employment without regard to, among other things, mental or physical disability. And it also requires that contractors doing business with the city are required to assure that equal opportunity be offered by their organizations as well. And this is something that City Council has been very good about policing their contractors and getting them to sign on to the equal opportunity requirements that the city has as well. For equal employment opportunity, persons with disabling conditions includes making a reasonable accommodation to known disabilities of a qualified disabled applicant or employee who would be able to perform the essential duties of the job if such an accommodation is made. And all accommodations have to be documented in writing. I've also attached a copy of the form that we use, the job accommodation request form that any applicant or employee can use to request an accommodation. And our office assists the employee and the hiring manager or supervising manager to go through an interactive process to make sure that we get the right accommodation. In most cases, we can make an accommodation without a great deal of resource or money. It's a lot of creativity, a lot of help out there, and we're working with organizations like the DIBTAC to learn more about the resources that are out there to help us employ people with disabilities. That's all I'll say. At this time, we have some guests who will share more information, and we appreciate the opportunity, and we're always available to any managers of the city to consult with them on these matters.
Thank you.
So I'm pleased to introduce a few community members who are going to speak on growing up with the ADA, life before the ADA, and their hopes for the future. So thank you again very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for inviting us to come and speak to you today. And I know most of you, it's nice being in front of you again. They've asked me to begin because I'm kind of the dinosaur of this group. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but when I start talking a little bit about how I grew up before the ADA, you'll probably guess how old I am. So when I was very young, I got a virus that attacked my spine. And depending on where that virus attacked your spine depends how where your paralysis is. And so I'm actually known as a para because my legs were mainly, that's where my paralysis is. But as I get older, I get weaker, and so then I become more of a quad, which means my arms as well as my legs are affected. So I started in a wooden wheelchair, believe it or not. So now you can kind of guess how old I am. And I stayed in that wooden wheelchair for probably 4 to 5 years before actual manual chairs came out. And so it was very, very difficult for me to get around because we could not fold the wheelchair or anything. So I was mainly pushed from place to place in that wooden wheelchair. I went to a segregated school, which was for... they called it at that time for handicapped children here in Portland. Part of the school was for handicapped children, and then the other was for the rest of the kids in the community. And I, one of the things that my mother said is that the world is not ready for you, so we're going to make you ready for the world. And I'll never forget that. And so education was very important to her. And so what she did in that segregated school is she went down to the other part of the school and talked to the principal and got a program started so that we could go down there for certain classes and start the integration process. And so that was started then. When I got into my manual chair and was able to move around more on my own, my mom decided, well, we want her to go into a so-called regular school. And so we actually moved the family into the Lake Oswego area where they were one-level schools, where I was able to go to school there and be with the rest of the children, or the young adults at that time. And I graduated in high school there. I was not able, there were no curb cuts, there were no ramps on buses. It was pretty much an environment that I could not be very independent. The only independency I really had was in my home because my mother, again, wanted to make sure that I would be ready for the world, and she wanted me to be as independent as possible. I got my degree in education, and when I went to ask to teach here in Portland, I was denied a teaching position because they said that I would be too much of a mental effect on children with disabilities, with children because of my disabilities. So I was not allowed to teach. And from then on, I went into the human and civil rights area. And as you all probably know, I've done that for the professionally as well as now since I've retired. I'm doing this on my own, and it will always be part of me. I'm just very, very passionate, again, in the human and civil rights. And so I'm going to turn it over to Amy now so she can talk about what it was like after the ADA. But I do want to thank you so much for your support and to continue to support both environmental as well as attitude in making sure that discrimination is not against people with disabilities or anybody. Because, again, disabilities can affect anybody. And if there are laws, you can have as many laws as you can to protect people with disabilities. But if you don't have the attitude change, it's not going to happen. And we still have a long ways to go in attitude. Thank you very much. Amy?
My name is Amy Scherer, and I was very lucky to grow up with the Protections and Civil Rights of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The ADA enabled me to be who I am today. It enabled me to be mainstreamed in school. It gave me the physical access to my school through ramps. I remember when I first started school that I could pick where the ramp was located to get into my school and around. And to a 6 or 7 year old kid, that was pretty awesome. And those ramps are still there today. The elevator that came in midway through my time is still there. The rest of the schools that I went to as I transitioned through the district to middle school and high school, their access is still there, and will be forever, because it gave me access, it gave everyone access. And as Jan was saying, changing the attitudes, a lot of the children felt that it was pretty cool to come with me on my accessible routes through the school because they were kind of a novelty. But it was also useful for other activities. They didn't allow skateboarding in the school, but you can see ramps at a skateboard park. The ADA also enabled me, because I was able to get an education, I'm able to get a job, and I also was able to get a service dog to enable me to be independent throughout the streets of Portland. I'm originally not from Portland. I'm from a very small town where you rely on your family to help you out and do everything. And at 17 years old, you really get tired of, you know, taking your parents with you everywhere and the curfew that is, you know, that is naturally contained within that and the scheduling and everything. And with a service dog, because of the ADA, I can do anything I want. And I can also, you know, go and get a higher education at the college level. And with that higher education, I can go and get a job. And as we transition throughout throughout time, technology is moving forward. And technology, when I first started school, computers were just coming into it, but the students now start computers in the third, fourth grade, or even earlier. And a computer was the key to unlocking my mind. With technology, I can do anything I need to. My mind, I will turn around and write you a book if you ask me a question, as long as I have a keyboard underneath my hands. But handwriting with an ink pen, this is what you get, a quarter of a sheet of paper. And that's as long as my hands will last. But with a keyboard, with the technology, with the ADA, I can be who I want to be. I can be the person that my coworkers know as a talented data entry and alternative formats person and go to for many things. I can be that person. I can be anything I want to be. I graduated high school as a valedictorian. I was one of seven out of a class of 434 that were valedictorians. Without the ADA, I could not have done that. Without the ADA, I could not be who I am today. And I would really, truly like to thank you for all your support of the ADA and other civil rights laws that are here in the city of Portland and all the attitudes and the open-mindedness that are here in the city of Portland toward people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Was me?
Yeah.
I'm Jerry Delaney, and I'm kind of supposed to get out my crystal ball and tell you what the future is going to be. And I'm kind of like, I don't see that well anyway, so the ball's pretty fuzzy. So I have a lot of difficulty trying to figure out the future sometimes. But I think that the future that I see is a future when the ADA is not thought of as a law, but is common sense. What I see in the future is I see that technology will step forward and you will have interactive devices where vision is not the most important thing in the world in order to use that device. And you won't have to do the keyboard entry. You'll be able to have speech recognition. And a time when all disabilities look at life and no matter where you're at and where you're coming from, they look at it in such a way that it's no longer a law. It becomes just common sense that this is the way that we do business. So many times in the past 20 years, I've found that people with disabilities will need a certain modification or a certain adaption. And then the spinoff of that is that everybody benefits from it. Everybody does. It's easier to read the screen, for instance. Access, wheelchair access is easier for everybody. And as we're growing a little older, it's going to become more and more essential for more and more of the community. It's terribly important that the city stays and understands not just the ADA, but the spirit of the ADA and what this is really all about. What we're talking about are the very same issues that you deal with from day to day and week to week. That's livability, it's the environment, it's pedestrian access, all of that infrastructure. It has to be developed continually. And my hope is that in the future that that will be done just because that makes sense. This makes sense. And the ADA and everyone will be treated with respect and dignity. And we won't have to anymore, like I've had to do, stand up and say, this is wrong. You can't do this, and have the police called or have to threaten a lawsuit in order to get companies to do the right thing and to make materials accessible. It's a challenge, but I think that it comes down to just common sense. And I guess I introduce Don. This is Don Mustell.
And I've worked with Jerry at OmniMedia Networks, and I also have a little bit of trouble seeing things, but I'm more seeing things differently than everybody else anyway. I just want to say that I remember in the city of Portland back in 1970 and 72, when Jerry Blake at the Portland State University was chairman of the Urban Studies Department and doing the original urban design stuff. And a young woman named Robin Stevens came to him, Robin being a cerebral palsy victim in a wheelchair, and basically, as many of the people here in the community know, was one of the original people who came and locked her wheelchair into different places so that people couldn't remove her. In order to make this point that, yes, we need the, you've already blocked access. You can't remove us. You can't stop us. And Robin today is in Denver, Colorado, and is doing quite well. Is if you'll check out the book of Who's Who in America, she is one of the first people who received, with a significant disability, who received a master's in urban planning from PSU. But in the future, what I really want to say, following up on what Jerry was saying and following up what Amy was saying, is it's not an Americans with Disabilities Act. It's an Enabling an American Act. And that's what this is really all about, that we make this our community one where we are enabling one another, where we're no longer afraid of you taking a piece of my pie because I'm blind and you are in a wheelchair, and I'm afraid that if you get something, I'm not. Very often that happens in the quote, disabled community, that we become afraid of that. I want very much for us to say to one another, you know, you can't say you can't play. You can't say you can't work. You can't say we can't live. You can't say we can't love. Very much along the lines of what Virginia Paley wrote in her absolutely incredible book. I was a preschool teacher for 20 years, and that was my guiding principle with the children that I worked with. I would really like us to see to work for Portland to continue to work toward that, where we are a city of where, yeah, you can say you can work, play, live, love as whole as a being as you want to be.
Thank you very much. And I know we have a couple more people who wanted to speak, but Jan, you said at the start that you consider yourself a dinosaur. I consider you one of the most inspirational leaders of for the causes that you care about. So I wanted to give you the proclamation.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I think we have a couple more folks who were prepared to speak.
I'll stay in place until you get around us, okay?
Thank you all for being here. Thank you. David, please go ahead.
My name is David Miller, and thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate that. The commissioner mentioned that, you know, I wanted to be sure that something happened this year. It's not just this year, it's every year. I've been working with ADA and disability advocacy issues almost 20 years. And when I came to Portland, I think I've had a chance, I think, to meet with everybody here, I think. Maybe not, but the message that I want to share is the proclamation to which you all signed on to today will be uploaded onto the 2010by2010.org website. Is a project that the ADA National Association of ADA Centers from each region of civil rights, all 10, which we are in the 10th region. It's a project to get the bodies to support and recommit to the ADA. And that'll be uploaded. It's uploaded for a series of different things that people can go there and say, okay, Portland has recognized and they're willing, they're open, and come because they care. And that's a very important message. But when they get here, we have to be able to not only be hospitable, but what a wonderful lesson in civics for the folks behind me from Korea to see what civil rights means and how it is actually alive and working. It's an actual tool that brings the inclusion and the importance and everybody's abilities to the table. And that is something that will expand as this city continues to grow, both physically and mentally, as far as the attitudes go, with the previous testimonies that you've heard, which I won't go through the litany of my personal, save you the boredom, that you saw a wide variety right there, but there's so many that couldn't be here today that you don't see, that don't have a voice per se, that can say thank you. And for those that can't be here and that are at home maybe watching on TV, I say thank you for them.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is John Coughlin. I'm International Director of Disability Aid Abroad, and I'd like to put maybe an international perspective on the ADA. Disability Aid Abroad is an international not-for-profit charity based in Portland, Oregon, and in Belfast in Northern Ireland. Our mission is to help people with disabilities in developing countries, as David said, using the ADA as an international tool. Currently, we fund disability projects run primarily by women with disabilities in Tanzania. People with disabilities are the forgotten voice of international development. In many parts of the developing world, disability is still seen as a cultural stigma. So people with disabilities are frequently denied medical treatment, education, and employment prospects. The UN estimates that there are 50 million people with disabilities in Africa. Only 2% of them have any access to medical treatment or rehabilitation. Less than 5% receive any formal education, and under 8% are in paid employment. I'd like to give you just a few examples of the problems and how we're trying to address these problems. We run a residential centre for mentally disabled young people in Morogoro in the Central Highlands in Tanzania. They're vulnerable young adults, and many have experienced serious sexual abuse. There's a myth in Central Africa that if a man has HIV/AIDS, he can be cleansed of his AIDS if he has sex with a vulnerable young person. Yet when we would take a young disabled person to a medical center for treatment, they're often, frequently, nearly always denied treatment. The reason that's given is for two reasons, really. They say one is disabled people can't have sex. And they also talk about a double jeopardy. They say, well, they have a disability, and now they have HIV/AIDS. So what's the point of treating them? So Disability Aid Abroad, in cooperation with the local CCBRT Disability Hospital in Dar es Salaam, we're developing a HIV/AIDS awareness disability training program for health professionals. We want to get the message across that medical treatment is a human right that shouldn't be denied to people just because they have a disability. And in an employment, there's no culture of employing a disabled person in Central Africa. Although many African governments have signed up to the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with a Disability, and Article 27 of that convention speaks specifically about employment rights, there's no incentive to employ disabled people. So Disability Aid Abroad, we've set up a unique project involving international trade unions to promote the employment of disabled people. The AFL-CIO in Oregon, the TUC in the UK, and the ICTU in Ireland is developing a 3-year pilot program to support the employment prospects of people with disabilities in Tanzania. And I'd like to take this opportunity of welcoming the continued support of Portland City Hall politicians in this initiative. You know, we're celebrating today the 20th anniversary of the ADA, and as Commissioner Fish has said, it's a piece of legislation to which the U.S. should feel rightly proud. The ADA is recognized universally as a template of good practice for disability legislation. And part of the mission of Disability Aid Abroad is to use the principles and the experiences of the ADA to promote the human rights of people with disabilities internationally. So thank you for letting me come here today.
Thank you both very much.
One more quick plug. To not forget the resource fair on the 26th, and to thanks again to Commissioner Fritz, her staff, Sarah. And I would be totally remiss without thanking Nicole Sharon for her endless hours of effort in this whole event. It's like she's worked really, really hard. So just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed, Nicole Sharon is also one of our wonderful staff who chose to stay in the background to allow other folks to speak today, but I'm very proud of her work in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And thank you all for testifying. We have come a long way, and we still have a long ways to go. And I remember that just recently Joe Walsh, a frequent visitor to City Council, pointed out some ways that we can improve our City Council meeting practices, which we are implementing with city staff. And indeed, I thank all of my colleagues and Mayor Adams for his leadership in making this a priority for the city and in encouraging the Commission on Disability to do its work. And we know we need to do even more. So thank you very much, everybody who's here today.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. All right. I'd also like to acknowledge, before we get to communications, that the City of Portland Office of Management and Finance is hosting 14 graduate students from all over the country who are attending Portland State University's Hatfield School of Government Summer Program for a job shadow day today. It includes professionals in financial analysis and management analysis, program management and program and project management. This is part of a 5-week-long academic program. The Oregon Performance Institute, e-government, public sector, financial management, sustainability, or Generation Next. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Stand up, would you? What a smart-looking group of people. We hope that you get something out of your time with us. You're part of the nation's best public management office. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 1040?
Request of Sonia Harju to address council regarding domestic violence, prevention, and consequences. She has called and has to reschedule.
Okay. Please read the title for item number 1041.
Request of Sue Bailey to address council regarding domestic violence, prevention, and consequences. She, too, is rescheduling.
Can you please read the title for item number 1042?
Request of Kurt Albright to address council regarding problems apartment owners have in the Outer East Side of Portland.
Hi.
Good morning.
Only one person, the person who signed up is the only one who can testify.
Okay. Do I hand out these copies?
You can just hand it to the clerk. So which one of you is Mr. Albright?
I am Kurt Albright.
Okay, and who are you?
My name is Mo Farhood.
Okay, you have not signed up, so only he can testify.
Okay, I'm not going to testify.
Yeah, there you go. So if you want to take his seat, try to keep a fair process for everybody. Welcome. You just give us your first and last name, no address. If you're representing anybody, let us know that. And 3 minutes on that clock in front of you will help you count down your time. We're glad you're here.
Thank you, sir. My name is Kurt Albright. I'm here because of the market conditions out on the East County side. Real estate values have dropped substantially. Expenses have gone up, and the sewer bills and the taxes out there, property owners just aren't making it. And I've given you a summary statement here and a further in-depth statement, which it also includes the particular property I live at, the financials for the last 2 years. And we are one of over 200 property owners here in the city of Portland that just aren't making it. And we're not making it because of the cost of the sewers, the changing market conditions. The area of town that we're in is a depressed rental value area. And we don't have the money, and we need some help and assistance from the city to save our neighborhood. It is in deep trouble, and the problem is growing and worsening. And I think it's critical that the city take a close look at what's happening out there. And all of us independent owners are small people. We're not large corporations, and we're not surviving. And you'll see in my financials that we make very little money. We live off of the place's cash flow, like the mom-and-pop grocery store. And we're literally suffering and trying to make it. And the market is being flooded by people being pushed out because they can't afford what the city is requiring us to do in a lot of cases. And I think what I'm here to do is to try to save my home and the homes of many other apartment owners that live right there in the community. We're the backbone of the community, and we're literally starving, and we're trying to make it. And that's basically what I got to say. The rest of it's in paper.
Where's your property at?
It's on Southeast 158th and Stark.
Are you a member of Metro Multifamily?
Yes, sir.
So they're your sort of trade association?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm here independently.
Yeah.
Already appreciate the information. And Commissioner Fish is the individual that I've assigned on council the issue of housing. So I would ask that his office follow up with you, and I'll also stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. All right. Can you please read communications item number 1043?
Request of Erica Jayasuriya to address council regarding REAL Prep Charter Academy.
Hi. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Erica Jayasuriya. I am a 24-year long resident of Portland, proud Portland resident. And I am the founder and director, first, of Freedom Through Freestyle, which is your newest arts nonprofit. And our first accomplishment was the unanimous approval of the Portland School Board for our charter school in December. You may have seen us in the newspaper as High School for Recording Arts Portland, and we've recently gone through a complete renaming and rebranding to better suit the city and the community that we're serving. So our new name is REAL, R-E-A-L, Prep Charter Academy, REAL standing for Recording, Entertainment, Arts, and Literacy. And we invite you to join our community by being a realist, which is recording, entertainment, arts, and literacy is science and technology. So I'm coming to you today really to just wet your whistle for a longer conversation. I spent a lot of time with this document. You may recognize the Act for Art, as well as participating over the last 2 years with the high school redesign process. As we looked at what the gap was, that was where we looked to fill. That if Portland is really looking to establish itself more as an art city, we really need a free public arts high school that's going to establish Portland in the larger stratosphere of arts education and arts movement in the country. I was invited to the Arts Education Partnership Forum in DC. We were the only school represented there in the New Leaders in Arts Education Forum, along with, you know, the Kennedy Center, Carnegie Hall. So we're already out there really making a name for ourselves and for Portland as the place where the newest arts academy for 21st century learners is developing. We are the focus option school in the high school redesign. That is your art school. The school district, because we worked collaboratively with them, decided to use us as the art school. So we really want to engage with you more so that we are aligned with where the city is going in terms of this work with the Creative Action Plan. We're also aligned. We are the Portland school that's doing credit for proficiency with ODE and career technical ed. So that, I'm coming to the end, but our whole process, our unanimous approval was based on our spirit of collaboration. We are completely minority owned, driven, operated, and target marketing. So we welcome any opportunities that we have to work with you.
Have you been in contact with Jennifer Yocum?
Jennifer and I had a conversation before we even submitted our application, and also with Reese Lord, right.
I'd encourage you. She's does arts and culture in my office, right. So I encourage you. You can stop up on your way out and maintain close contact with her.
Okay. I would encourage you to have her maintain close contact with us, too. You know, thank you.
Thanks. Can you please read the title for item number 1044?
Request of Troy McNair Sr. to address council regarding the Real Prep Charter Academy.
Hi.
Good morning, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Troy McNair. I'm actually a native from New Jersey and worked in New York City for over 20 some odd years in the entertainment industry for the largest urban multimedia entertainment company in New York City that just sold for a little over $350 million to Universal Records. Also, I was the global manager for Disney Regional Entertainment. I started my own firm and just so happened to be Googling and seeing Real Prep Academy here in Portland, Oregon, and I was really amazed about what they were doing, what the school was about dealing with entertainment industry. I actually look at the cameras and the AV systems in this building right now, and those are huge careers that young people unfortunately don't learn about until they're college, until they actually see, you know, and get into college. Real Prep Academy is actually a school that's innovative, that's actually going to help young people understand the business and entrepreneurship opportunities in the entertainment industry. And I applaud the city for not only approving the school, but I've noticed coming back and forth. I've been here in Portland traveling for the last 3 or 4 months and learning and seeing all the art and creative buildings, opportunities that you guys are doing here in the city, which I've paid attention to a lot of different trends. From Atlanta doing their multimedia, from Philadelphia, Obviously, we know New York and LA is very strong in the entertainment industry, but it's a great opportunity for young people as entrepreneurs, as executives, to get and understand all the different opportunities that the entertainment industry has. And I think Real Prep Academy will give young people that opportunity to know the different career opportunities and paths that exist in the entertainment industry that we don't see outside of just film and TV and dancing. So I just like to thank the council for giving me an opportunity to speak, and I hope that the city will also stand behind Real Prep Academy and look at the different opportunities that young people will have with the school. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony. All right, that gets us to the 10 o'clock time certain. Can you please, but before we do that, we'll do the consent agenda. I'd like to pull 1053. We'll hear it next week.
Mayor, if I could pull 1066, I have a non-controversial amendment.
Okay, 1066 is pulled for later consideration. Anybody else wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
Commissioner Fish, you also had 1068.
Hey, Carla, I've learned never to argue with you publicly. If you say so, it is true. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, 1068 is pulled for consideration later in our agenda. Unless there's additional objections, please call the vote.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for the 10 o'clock time certain item number 1046?
Accept the recommendations in the Electric Vehicles Portland Way report and direct City of Portland bureaus to implement policies, programs, and strategies to promote and integrate electric vehicles into their scope of work.
Well, I'm pleased to put for council consideration the following set of policies for the City of Portland. For electric vehicles, titled The Portland Way, it is, as we have done in almost all of our innovations in the City of Portland, we use ourselves as a community and as a city government as a living laboratory. In late 2009, I asked my staff and the Portland Development Commission to develop policies to position Portland as a leading electric vehicle city in the United States in light of the anticipated market availability of electric vehicles in 2010. My staff, PDC, staff convened and led a weekly electric vehicle working group, which included representatives from City Bureau, City Fleet, Purchasing, Planning and Sustainability, Development Services, and Transportation. In addition to tracking developments in the electric vehicle industry, and planning around charging station deployment, the working group identified ways to successfully position Portland as an early adopter of integrated electric vehicles into our city. And that is what we have for council consideration today. Electric vehicles are a natural fit for Portland, given our DNA of transportation innovation. And this will lead to, I believe, more jobs and economic development. If we are willing to be at the cutting edge of their introduction, both in terms of the vehicles themselves, but also in terms of the infrastructure that it takes to make them ubiquitous. So part of the effort to make sure we were coordinated among all of our bureaus and speaking with one voice was the appointment of an electric vehicle I call czar. I guess his official, unofficial title is point person. James, would you start us off with the policies that are called for in this report?
Sure. Good morning. As Mayor said, my name is James Mast. I'm a senior project manager with the Portland Development Commission and the city's point person on electric vehicles. And we often call them EVs rather than just electric vehicles to make it a little easier to come out of the tongue. The mayor appointed me to this position at the end of last year to help maintain and build on the city's leadership role in the electric vehicle field and in recognition of the PDC's activity in promoting the local EV industry and growing jobs. In my position, I'm responsible for coordinating the city's initiatives around policy, infrastructure deployment, and economic development with relation to EVs. Since the beginning of this year, we've been sitting down internally on a weekly basis to meet with various bureaus to position ourselves and create a working group that will identify and remove barriers for electric vehicle adoption and infrastructure deployment. This morning, we'll be discussing our current approach. And I want to emphasize that it's important that this is a living document because the field is very much in flux. There's a lot of changes in technology that are taking place, and that it's this is the sort of the beginning of a strategy for the city to work off of, and we're willing to move this around as technology changes and as things develop in the field. So what I'm going to start off with is I wanted to give you a little bit of background and context of what's going on. I mean, we can all talk about what the city strategy is, but it's very important to actually talk about the context that we're dealing with. So the electric vehicles are no longer some faraway concept of the future of transportation. They're coming from major manufacturers by the end of this year. And over the last several years, electric vehicles are becoming an increasingly key focus of major auto manufacturers, and development of the field has also been encouraged by significant federal investment in electric vehicle industry. What once was a trickle of electric vehicles is quickly becoming a flood. Now, almost all auto manufacturers have announced plans to release plug-in hybrids or electric vehicles within the next few years. More immediately, there are going to be two manufacturers coming out this year with consumer automobiles. One is the Nissan Leaf. It's going to be coming out in the third quarter of this year. The other is the Chevrolet Volt, which is also going to be coming out this year. In addition to those vehicles, I'm give you a sampling, and this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the kind of vehicles that are out there. You can see there's a wide range of electric vehicles that are coming to the marketplace, including some companies based here in Oregon, most notably in terms of vehicles, Brammo and Arcimoto, which are two Oregon companies, which are supplied by companies that are based here in Portland. And along those lines, there is an opportunity for a number of niche manufacturers within Oregon to grow within the electric vehicle space. To give you a little bit more background and understanding of what electric vehicles are about, I'm just going to give you a quick walkthrough of what the technical terms are. First, as you're probably all familiar with hybrid electric vehicles, the Toyota Priuses of the world and the Ford Fusion Hybrid that are out on the marketplace right now, those combine an internal combustion engine and an electric engine and battery and blend between those two to create more efficient driving. What is going to be coming out from on a mass market standpoint are battery electric vehicles, such as the Nissan Leaf. So these are purely electric vehicles with batteries that require charging. And they work off the energy stored in the batteries. Another area that a lot of auto manufacturers are focusing on, too, is plug-in hybrids. Most notably, the Chevrolet Volt